yesterday of having a degree of hesitancy as he started about what he was going to share and whether folk would find it helpful. I'm sure we have, and I have to say the hesitancy that he had is magnified at least tenfold in myself as I come to share with you. It's one thing to sit down there, as I have done for many years, and another to be standing up here. I was reminded just last night as some folk were talking to me about the man who had sharks in his swimming pool. There was a challenge that he presented to folk, and a challenge that had a reward. The challenge was to swim a full length of the swimming pool. The reward was either the hand of his daughter in marriage or £1 million. And one night they had a big party in the house, and as he was in the house drinking with his friends, he heard a splash and he saw this commotion down at the swimming pool. He ran down to there just as the guy climbed out the other end with the sharks behind him. And he said, "Well done, young man. What do you want? Do you want the hand of my daughter in marriage, or do you want £1 million? "No," he said, "I want the name of the man who pushed me in." And in some senses, I feel like that today. And I'll speak to Sandy afterwards and find out who pushed me in. I'm also hesitant to speak, though, because I've often been at conferences and heard folks share about what's happening in their church and their situation. And I've come away from that feeling guilty. I've come away from those situations wondering why what's going on in their situation is not happening in mine and what I'm doing wrong. And I don't want to generate that kind of feeling today. I have to say that someone last night told me that I wouldn't do that anyway, because if I said that things were going well, he wouldn't believe me. And perhaps you're a bit like that. But I don't want to make things harder than they might be already for folk. The topic I've been given, though, is mission to the parish, and that's something that would be a real concern for me personally, reaching out to the parish, and our concern about how we do that. And Dick touched on that yesterday as he spoke, about the way that Paul wanted a missionary church in Ephesus, and therefore a church that was relevant, and I believe that that's a real challenge for us today, about how we can be relevant in our parishes and to the people of our parishes. Almost aware that everything around us is changing, and grappling with change in the church, the kind of questions about what we hold on to and keep, and what we're ready to let go of and change. Pews, organs, hymns, what? In our situation, in looking at mission, we've had to grapple with these questions, and when the invitation came to speak, Sandy suggested that I might speak about how things have changed and developed in our situation, because much of what's happening would be unusual. I said, "Tell us of how the opportunities arose and how you grasped them." And he's very persuasive. I think bully was the word that somebody used last night. Maybe to start, I should say that our situation is a bit different from other places, in that there has been a real freedom to develop things and change things. My session clerk keeps on saying, "I think we should just take things easy this year. I think we should consolidate." I have to say that he rarely wins the argument. And I'm not sure how much that's me and how much that's the church which I've been called to be minister of. Maybe it's a bit of both. But I came in on the back of a feeling that if we don't change, we'll die. At least one of the churches, and I've got a linked charge, but at least one of the churches was predominantly women and mainly elderly. And they knew that they needed to change. So all of that gave me a green light early on to move on and to change things and to look at the style of ministry that we had and how we reached out to the parish. I have to say, though, that it's not always been easy. I heard a story earlier on this year about a minister who was eventually almost forced to leave the congregation that he was serving because there was a huge argument about where the piano should be. He wanted it moved from the side to the centre, and the more they discussed it, the more folk took sides, and the church just began to fall apart, and he left. 3 years later, he came back to the church, and lo and behold, the piano was in the middle where he'd wanted it. And he said to the new minister afterwards, "How on earth did you manage to get that piano moved?" And through gritted teeth, the minister said, "An inch at a time." And it's been that for us. Sometimes it feels like the change has been an inch at a time, and we've had to work through that. Peter Greystone tells a story of visiting a Scottish church that had developed and moved on, and over coffee afterwards, he spoke with someone who'd been a member there for over 60 years. I'm sure you know how the conversation goes. "My, you must have seen a lot of changes in your time." "Yes, I have," said the man, "and I opposed every one." Well, we've got his twin. But despite that, we've changed and we have moved on. Three areas, perhaps, that I would highlight for you that we've moved on in and that we've developed. First of all, we've changed and developed our youth work programme. We've got six different Crusader groups meeting, some after school, some at lunchtime in the local primary school, and some in the evenings. So at the moment, we've got around 120 young people who come along to Crusader groups, who receive very clear Christian teaching, and that would compare to a Sunday school that's been fairly static at around 40 to 50. Secondly, we've developed strong links in the community. We ran a daycare centre for elderly. We still do that 5 days a week. Up until last year, we ran a youth centre with a focus on drink and drug education. We helped to run the local lunch club. We have contacts through schools, through community council. We run a modern toddlers group. So there are a number of things where, pardon me, we have involvement with folk in the community. And thirdly, we've had a focus on outreach. So we were involved in Mission Scotland. We've done parish visitations. We've done special outreach events. We've been running Alpha courses for about 4.5 years. And lots of bits and pieces in between times. We've run outreach barbecues. We've organised golf for men. We've done prayer evangelism, knocking doors and offering to pray simply for what folk would perceive their needs to be. But for us, outreach has always been on the agenda. And that's been important. Now, I'd love to say, and love to be able to say, that the result of that is that our church is overflowing. But it's not. Last year, in one of the congregations, we had a 5% drop in membership. But it's not because of the change. It's because they're dying. And the folk who left, left because they died in the last year. And there haven't been the same number of folk who've come in and who've joined during that period. And I think that pattern is there across Scotland just now. I may be wrong in that, but I sense that that's the pattern across Scotland in all the denominations. And we're not bucking that trend. We've changed, and we're still looking at that, but it's like Crawford was saying last night. We try one thing after another and continue to do so and believe that we should, but haven't yet broken through anything, and that would be a real frustration. We've got a full-time evangelist. We've got 100 kids coming to Crusaders each week. In the months leading up to December, we had between 60 and 70 folk on Alpha courses. But we're still not seeing folk respond, not in the numbers that we would want. We're seeing some folk come to faith, and that's exciting and it's encouraging, but not in the measure that we would hope for or pray for. And I sense that's where most of us would be just there, and that's a real frustration. And I'm not coming and saying that we've broken through that. We haven't, but there are encouragements. And the invitation to speak, interestingly, forced me to stop and to begin to ask the questions about what God was doing and what had happened. And for that, I'm grateful. Perhaps for that alone, I'm not sure, but grateful for that spur to stop and to look at what God was doing. And I think looking at the big picture, as a result of the changes, two things have happened, and it's those things that I want to share with you. First of all, that folk in the community have got a far more positive perception of the church than they did have. Now, we've still a long way to go in that, but one of the things that's really challenged me recently is the research that suggests that people do still believe in God. They've not lost that, but that the word that they most commonly associate with church is boring. The word that they most commonly associate with church. Someone has once said that if you laid end to end all the people who fall asleep in church on a Sunday morning, they would be far more comfortable. Undoubtedly, the perception folk have of church is that that's what you do or may do if you go to a normal service on a Sunday. So they believe in God, but they're not going to come to the church looking for him. I was speaking to someone 2 weeks ago who's been doing some building work for us. I guess he's in his mid-30s. He's running his own business. He has a nice car. He has a nice house. I'm not sure whether he's married or not. He's certainly living with someone. And as we talked, he said, "You know, it's strange, I don't get a buzz from this anymore." Said, and the other day my friend just said to me, "What's all this for? What's it all about?" But they don't come looking for the answer in the church because they don't think it's there. And it's that question of how we break the barriers down so that folk who are asking these questions will begin to come and to ask them of us that we may tell them of Jesus and of the life there is in him. And certainly I think for us that some of the barriers that were there have come down. People don't see the churches stuck up anymore, but for most of them the church has been there either for them or their children or their granny. And it's interesting the ways that we've had contacts with different generations. But for most of them, the church has been around for them or their family at some point when they've needed it. And they've appreciated that. And the barriers are beginning to come down. And I believe that that's something for us to build on. The second thing that's changed, I've mentioned already, and that is that the church itself has got a focus on reaching out that would almost be right at the very heart of what we do, of what happens. I think it would be very difficult now for somebody to shift that. It's there, right at the heart of what we do. The kind of priority of reaching out is there, and many folk in the church have grasped it. We took part in the Alpha Initiative and encouraged all of our members to invite somebody to come on an Alpha course. And I reckon that at least 60 or 70 folk were invited to come to Alpha. Most of them didn't come. But folk had begun to grasp that reaching out was important. I got a phone call from someone who's a member of the congregation saying, I haven't managed to get anybody to come. Can I come on my own? And then she said to me, Graham, I was so sure that my husband was going to come this time, and I was so sure that this was going to be the time when he was going to give his heart to the Lord. Said, what am I doing wrong? And I had to say, I don't think you're doing anything wrong. But burning in her was a heart to see folk won for Christ. And that would be an indication of what God has done amongst the folk that I'm with. Now the question is, how did that come about? Well, it's a very ordinary parish. It's a working class parish in the heart of the steelworks in Lanarkshire. In the years before I came, they'd been unable to pay their mission and aid, so that maybe gives you a measure of how things were. There had been a mixture of evangelical and liberal ministries in the churches in the past. But very early on, we had a session conference, and we began to look at how we could meet the needs of the parish. The honest answer of the elders at that stage was that they didn't even know what the needs of the parish were, never mind how they could meet them. Now, that was with 90% of the elders staying in the parish. And that really surprised me, but it was a very honest answer from the elders. We don't even know what the needs are, never mind how we can begin to meet them. The church was insular. It was inward looking, and what happened out there really didn't matter. I came to the church with a very different agenda, with a real concern for reaching out and for the community. I think there's something that burns in my heart about reaching out to folk with the gospel and winning folk for Christ, about drawing alongside people, and that's something that has always been with me. Before I went into the ministry, it was there. It was what pushed me on. I wanted to see folk won for Christ. It was something that God had burned in my heart and that has never left me. And I came with that agenda, and it was, how can we begin to do that together? And it was very clear that we were actually pretty hard pushed just to keep the show on the road. We were pretty hard pushed just to keep going what was going in the church. And if we were going to grow and reach out, we needed some kind of focus for that, and preferably someone who would take that on. So we agreed to appoint a development worker if we could raise the money. Now, when I took it to the session, those who thought it was a good idea said, yes, let's go for it. The cynics reckoned we wouldn't get the money, so there was no harm in saying yes to it. So a unanimous vote from the session to go ahead, and we sent a letter round everybody in the congregation. We said, if you can afford it, we would like you to give £2 a week on top of what you give in your normal offering. And that kind of give us your money and here's what we'll do with it caught people's imagination, to the extent that we raised enough money from that to employ somebody on a 4-year contract. And because it's money that folk have been giving either monthly or weekly, that has continued. We've employed somebody for the last 8.5 years. Not radically different from Crawford's appointment in Mains of Fintry. Now, we were very clear when they started that what they were not going to do was pick up what we were already doing. And that was key for us. They were going to do new work. They were going to develop new areas. So if the BB captain resigned, they were not going to pick that up. If we were short of Sunday school staff, they were not going to teach in Sunday school. It was not that those things were unimportant, but if we lost the focus on new work, then we would be lost. So we kept that focus. And we were fortunate that the development worker that we got forced me to keep that focus. There were once or twice where I asked him to do things and he came back and said, but you said when I started, and he was right. We kept that focus. And we gave them three areas to work on that reflect what I said early on, doing after school groups with Christian teaching as a part of that, looking at how we could meet the needs of elderly, and developing our outreach program, which at that stage was almost non-existent. Kevin Simpson came to us from a youth work project in Kilmarnock, and he worked with us for over 4 years, setting up much of the work that's still going on. He left to take on the director's post with Crusaders in Scotland, and since then we've employed a full-time evangelist, David Geddes, who came from SU, and at the moment a guy called Jim Winning, who's working with teenagers, and particularly trying to look at how we integrate young people into church and that whole area. But the whole process of change is one that's still going on. I read a story the other week of some men who'd gone away to hunt elk. I had to look up the dictionary to find out that they're deer, you know, like moose. They'd gone away and they had hunted elk. And at the end of the week, they had managed to kill six elk, and they wanted to take the six elk back with them. The plane came in to collect them, and the pilot took one look at them and the luggage and the six elk, and he said, there is no way that my plane is going to be able to take you out of here. We will just not get over the top of the mountains. And the guys looked at him and they said, but the plane that came to pick us up last year was exactly the same. The flying conditions were exactly the same, and we took six elk last year. So reluctantly, the pilot said, okay, and they loaded everything onto the plane, and they flew away. But sure enough, just as they were about to reach the top, it was clear they weren't going to get over, and they smashed into the hillside. And as they pulled themselves from the wreckage, one hunter said to the other, have you any idea where we are? And the hunter said, I think about a couple of miles from where we crashed last year. Now, I hope that we are learning from our mistakes and not simply perpetuating them, and that we are taking the time to look to see how things need to be changed so that we can reach out and hold folk when they come in, I hope for all the right reasons. But it is that looking at what we're doing and not perhaps perpetuating the mistakes that we've made. So at the moment, we're developing a new contemporary service with, I guess, what you describe as modern music, a multimedia approach to the presentation. We're using video clips, we're using computer-generated highlights for the talks, and we're doing that alongside our traditional services. We're looking at a house group program, and we're talking about developing those groups into cell groups. And when I go back tomorrow, I've got a meeting about that. Really changing the way that the groups run so that they've got a focus on reaching out, because they've become very inward-looking and insular. So there are still things that we're looking at changing and developing. Now, I can't guarantee that these things will work any more than the things that we've tried already. But the bottom line for me is that we are not going to stop trying to reach people for Jesus, and we'll do whatever it takes in order to reach them. And if that means that we've got to change things, then change things we will. Because the stark reality is that without Jesus, folk face an eternity in hell. And that burns inside me. And that hurts me. And I wonder about that day when I face Jesus, when I meet Jesus, and when Jesus asks that question about what I've done with what he gave me in meeting the Great Commission. And I guess that's the thing that drives me more than anything else. How can I fulfill what Jesus has given me to do? Now, I think we've got a long way to go, and I'm not sure where it will take us. But one of the things that's kept me going over the last few years has been reading about folk like Murray McChain, who worked himself into the ground in Dundee, outreach events in folks' houses, involved in parish extension, and seeing nothing happening and then God breaking in and changing things. And I pray for that to happen. I'm going to work. But I'm also going to pray, because I know that without the second, I might as well forget the first. The kind of awareness that nothing less than a move of God's Spirit in our land will change things. Nothing less, I believe. And I hold on for that. But I also believe that we can't just kind of down tools until then. And I hold on. One of the verses that's been particularly important to me is Galatians 6, verse 9. Paul says, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Someone once told me that advice was a bit like a kiss on the forehead. It doesn't hurt, but it doesn't do you much good either. But Paul's advice is not like that. That verse has done me immeasurable good. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. And for us it has been keeping that focus on winning folk for Christ, being willing to do whatever it will take in order that that might happen. And if that means change for us, then change we will, because that has to be our priority. I've been told to leave plenty of time for questions and discussion, so I'm going to finish at that point and I think hand over to Nigel.
There's obviously a bit more clout than me, because we discussed early on how to handle this session, and I said, well, let's just do all the questions at the end. And he said, no, I think we should do questions after your talk and then at the end. So.
I think the honest answer to that is that some folk have managed to make that leap, if you like, that some folk have not, and that would be one of the reasons why we're developing a contemporary service at the moment, that for many folk that leap has been too much. And if we were to change Sunday mornings considerably, then the folk who come on Sunday morning would be unhappy. So that the gap is, at the moment, too big for folk to jump. So we've been saying, well, let's try and develop something that folk can come and meet with God and discover what God wants with their lives and how they can follow Jesus. So that's one of the reasons why we've been developing another service. Our prayer evangelism, we chose a couple of streets in the parish, and a group of people committed themselves to pray for those two streets, and to go and to knock the doors in that street and simply to offer to pray for any needs or concerns that folk had. So we sent letters round saying that it was going to be folk from the church, so that they didn't think it was Jehovah's Witnesses or someone that they would slam the door on. And folk simply went and said, we're from the church, we believe that God cares about you and about your family and any needs and concerns that you might have, and if there are things particularly you would like us to pray for, then, you know, if you share them with us, then we'll pray for them. And folk did that and then went back a month later and followed up some of that with some of those families. Now, not every place folk opened the door or welcomed them, but there were some places where that was very much appreciated. It's an end in itself. I wouldn't be saying that when you grow up you'll move into a traditional service. You know, I think there are folk who meet with God in contemporary worship services, and that is the way that they find that they best encounter God. And I would see us developing those services potentially, perhaps, as the service which most folk come to in 10 or 20 years' time. We've got a real problem in that, because I've got a linked charge and I've already got two Sunday morning services and an evening service. And we've actually added this on a Saturday night, and folks said to me, oh, you won't get folk out on a Saturday night. We've got about 40 folk coming out on Saturday nights with their families, and we do things with the kids as well. But I'm not sure that Saturday night is the best slot. I think it will need at some point to move into Sunday morning, and that's going to then give us real problems about how we work that through. I think that has been an issue for us. It's an issue that we've talked through with the elders. One of the ways that we want to try and hold folk together is once a month we're going to hold a family service, which will hopefully bridge both sets of folk, if you like. And most folk will drift between the two. You know, some folk will come on a Saturday or they'll go on a Sunday. It just depends. There are some folk who won't go to a service that's not exactly what suits them. So should I put this back on there?
So that there are some traditionalists who won't come to a family service, and there are some folk who will like contemporary worship so much that they won't come to a family service. So there'll be these folk at the outsides who will only come to what they enjoy, but I think the majority of folk in the middle will come to a service once a month that will hold us all together, and that would be our hope. I think we would be creating opportunities for folk to share their faith with people. And in our mother and toddlers group, we've got two mums who set that group up. And they've very naturally been the kind of people that folk have looked to. And through those contacts, we have begun to see some of the mums coming to church. And folk would be involved in that with that kind of agenda. Our lunch club, you know, it's even interesting things like, you know, she will stand up, the person who's in charge will say grace at the start. And we'll pray for the folk now in the lunch club who are not well, who are not there. And folk in the lunch club now appreciate that. And if there are concerns, they will actually say to her, you know, will you pray with me? So there's an awareness amongst these folk of the belief that people have, the trust that people have in God, and the questions that are around. So those things would be happening, I guess, naturally rather than forced, but they would be on the agenda. And in many ways, we'd be involved in work in which we see that we can bring some kind of distinctive Christian focus. So in our daycare centre, we would employ Christian staff, we would have a service on a Friday, and we would want to bring something that had a distinctive Christian focus to that work. I think everybody will give a different slant to the teaching that's there on the Alpha course. The majority of what's there we've been quite happy with. There are slants which we've changed. And I think that would be true of most folk who've used Alpha, that there are different slants that folk will give to different parts of the teaching. Crusader work would be, I guess, evangelistic, and the Sunday mornings would be more nurture. The big difficulty we have, the kids who come Sunday mornings come with their parents. The kids who come midweek, it doesn't matter if their parents come or not. So the big difficulty is how you get those kids, and some kids have made commitments and they begin to come Sunday mornings, but then their parents begin to do things and, you know, there's no parental support there. And that's horrendously difficult to kind of hold on to those kids on a Sunday morning. So we've seen one or two come in, but the vast majority of those young folk, their parents are not coming to church, and therefore it's been difficult to get them in and to integrate them. That actually has been the area of most concern and that we're looking at developing just now. We would have a lot of evangelistic work with young people. It's how we begin to nurture them once they have made decisions. And there are a fair number of young folk who've made Christian commitments. And it's how we nurture these young folk. And that would be a particular concern of the evangelist at the moment.
The problem mentioned last night about the parents being opposed when young people are children making a
No, we wouldn't have that. I think most parents would be at least ambivalent. Most of them would say, yeah, oh, well, that's good for them, you know, would be the general kind of attitude of folk. So that they wouldn't be put off by their parents, but they wouldn't be greatly encouraged to go to church or to come to Christian events.
Being from Marchand, did you have a Bible Boys Brigade and Girls Brigade that you had to put to the side for this midweek work? Or was it not there in the first place?
We did have and still do have a boys' brigade company and guides. In one of the churches, we had a scout group that folded because they didn't have sufficient leadership.
In fact, at the moment, our Boys Brigade are probably stronger in leadership than they've ever been, and we have got some Christian officers in that, and that's bringing a focus to the Boys Brigade that wasn't there before. So it hasn't had any detrimental effect on the Boys Brigade. In fact, if anything, I would say it's had a positive effect on that.
How do you perceive the preaching of the word in your whole view of the forward movement in those two parishes?
I would see it as central to what we do, and whether it would be contemporary service or a traditional service, then there would be a focus on the preaching of the word. I think that would perhaps be the constant between the contemporary and the traditional. That the focus on the preaching and the teaching of God's word is not something that we would say we can sweep to one side and do without. We need to keep that, and we'd seek to keep that. I think undoubtedly for many folk there is a point at which they reach where the cost, you know, is there. And I think there are times when we sell the gospel short and we don't make that clear. I see Jesus being very clear with people about what it would cost them. And it's kind of, you know, think it through. If you're not ready to pay it, then, you know, just go home. You know, I think of the rich young ruler, and I keep saying to my folk, you know, I think we would turn around and say to the rich young ruler, well, if you give away half your money, then maybe that would be okay. But Jesus doesn't. You know, it's kind of, there's where the line is. And I wouldn't want to change that with folk. And yes, for some folk, that's meant that they've fallen out with me, if you like, and have fallen out with the church. For some other folk who've been living in a relationship where they've been staying with a partner, it's actually made them say, well, we must get that one sorted out. And so folk have responded in different ways to that. But I think the challenges are there, yes, and folk respond in different ways to the challenges, and we can't and shouldn't take the challenges away. We've got a team of folk who are involved in the contemporary service, so it's not just myself. There are four or five of us who work on the programme for that, and we would share out who was doing what slots in the programme. We would use a whole lot of stuff. Sometimes it would be a Bible story that somebody's acting out, you know, a video clip of that. We recently did, we were talking about the cross and about the death of Jesus, and we started that whole evening off by showing a video, the clip of the Lion King, where Dad Lion gets killed. And we ended just as Dad Lion, you know, kind of swung down and got under the feet of the cattle or whatever it was, and he was killed. And we stopped the video and we said, tonight we're going to be thinking about the death of Jesus. The death of the lion was all a big mistake. Was Jesus' death all a big mistake? And for folk who've not been to church before, and many of them were along an offer, there was something that they could say, oh, I know that, and that they could kind of latch on to. So we've used stuff like that as well, and used it very effectively. We used recently just a clip from the Jesus film of Jesus hanging on the cross, and we played over the back of that, All I Do for You, I can't remember who it's by, but you know, very effective. That, you know, the song is just in the background. All I do it for you. And it was a song that people knew. They knew the words for it. And they went away saying, every time I hear that song now, I'm going to think of it in a different way. I'm going to sit down there, I think.